Good evening, everyone. This is KIZERO-RE, sometimes known as Terry from Colorado, and I'm the moderator slash net control for this version of the NLA Hams Net. This net is held every week in the Monday night call room. We have the NationalLibertyAlliance.org. You can go there, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and there's a big red button on the top left. This Monday night call, and go there, and it'll tell you the number and the code to get in. Not a problem. On the NLA Hams Net, we talk about ham radio and communications in general around communities of safety. And we hope that you will contribute and maybe learn something. So I will throw it open for questions right off the top. And if there are no questions, I'll go on to something else. But does anybody have any questions from last week or this week or something they've learned, something they've forgotten, something they'd like to know? If you do have a question or a comment, please call now.
As a matter of fact, I do. I do have a comment. This is Beatrix. I have a question, as a matter of fact. I am currently going through a court case, and I've been representing myself now for the past three hearings. I prior had an attorney. My question is, because it's a DUI case, and I find myself needing to put in some motions. The judge is taking the case to trial, and I need to create some motions. So I'm needing help with that. Would you have any advice, or would you be able to direct me in the direction of someone helping me to get that started?
Jim, I'll defer this one to you.
Well, not really. We aren't supporting things other than the work that we're doing on the New York case at the moment. And we're filing things also on Joe Robertson's case and the Nevada and Portland cases. But they don't fit. Now, that would probably go under habeas corpus. And we are meeting to... We have a group of a few people, four or five people, that are interested in learning how to write documents, and they're going to meet and see if we can give them instruction, give them some practice and so on, and begin to become proficient to the point where we can go ahead and take on some of the habeas corpus work again. But we're not really at that point right now at this time.
Okay.
I want to encourage you to explore around and see what the text is of the documents that we've written, especially this New York case that we filed, because we actually have a valid case number for that, and I don't remember exactly how to get there. Can you tell us again?
Go to the grand jury and then click documents. I'll take you right into, there's about 10 or 11 documents in there now that we filed in a New York State case. You can use those as examples, read them, look at them, and try and understand them.
Okay.
They're all different
always,
things.
And that's always good, Beatrice, because it kind of gets you into the same thought patterns of what you need to be in for your case. So mm-hmm. I would encourage you to read those and study those. And I'm sorry if this is an insufficient answer, and thank you, Jan, for delivering it. But is that sufficient for now? And you can keep you can learn a little bit more about what happens when. There's also a page that says when things are going to happen, what calls are on what night. But really, you're going to have to educate yourself. You can write this stuff, but you do have to learn a few things.
Mm-hmm.
I know that might not be the answer you wanted, but is that going to suffice?
Absolutely. I totally understand. I've gone through the whole Constitution course already, and I'm I've picked up a lot of things just by going through it and completing it. So I've graduated to the civil.
The civics course?
The civics course, yes. I'm now doing that, so.
Excellent. That's all good information. And if you want
Absolutely.
To take what you've learned so far from those two courses and read the stuff in the court case that he just told you about, the grand jury and then the docket, you'll pick up a lot more than you think. There's been several times when I didn't feel like I had absorbed all this information, but I didn't feel
mm-hmm.
like I really knew enough to start writing papers, and I haven't
yeah.
yet.
It's a lot of information. It's like another language almost.
It is like another language, as a matter of fact. You're absolutely right. But what I found is I understand the concepts involved a lot more clearly now. And I can point out, well, this guy isn't saying that right because he should say it this way. And this guy is just bluffing you right and left. You know, I've been able to discern some things. So that's
mm-hmm.
where I'm at in the course of writing papers. But
that is awesome. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it about 2 years now.
Okay.
Jan's been doing it only 3 months.
Okay, I'm about a month in myself.
Okay, good. Well, you've done quite well if you finished the Constitution and you started the civics course already. You're right on the right track.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Is that all?
Yes.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
I guess you've answered them all already.
I guess so. Well, there's a dog. Let's don't run over the dog. Oh, it has a leash and a person attached. Okay. And I have a bus coming up, so I'm going to get over. How many people got night, Jan?
Well, let me take a quick peek here. If I can get down to the right page, it looks like we've got 7 at the moment.
Wow, that's a pretty good course. Okay, I'd like for everyone to check in, tell me how they're doing, and if I need to, I'll fill it in with a lesson at the end. But I want to know how the people are doing. So we've mentioned several things you can do as homework, kind of, or as something that needs to be done anyway, whether they're going to continue on or not, get their license. I'd like now to find out how people are doing. So if you could give me your call sign and your name and your state. If you don't have a call sign, just name and state. And let's check everybody in and tell me how you're doing, how you're coming along, and where you're at. So I'll take check-ins now. Go ahead.
Well, this is KC3HVA, Pennsylvania Jan. I'm just checking in. I've been fighting computer battles now for the last 2 weeks. Have completely changed my internet service provider and my method of accessing the web and my emails. So if you have my old email, dome@laserlink.net, it no longer works. It's replaced by dome79hol@gmail.com. So be forewarned, it'll end up in the mid bin if it goes to LaserLink. Over.
Oh, thank you for that. Any more check-ins?
This is Helena in Pennsylvania. Can you repeat that again, Jan, please?
Which part? All of the above?
The dome, D-O-M?
And dome79hol@gmail.com.
Okay, thank you.
Or you can always reach me at jan@nationallibertyalliance.org.
I do want to volunteer for Robert or you. John said the other night to call you or Robert, so I'm announcing that I'll do research for you guys if you like. So
you want to do IRC stuff, huh?
You already have my email address.
Okay.
As for the ham stuff, Terry, I ordered a couple books, including the one for dummies, and that's me. And I don't have my radio yet, so that's my update.
Well, thank you, Helena. If you're on this call, we're officially not a dummy. So that term right away. Thank you.
That's what's on front page of this one book I got.
I know. Okay, anybody else?
Yes, this is Greg in Florida checking in.
Thank you, Greg. How you been doing? You learned anything in the last few weeks? Or made some...
I've been kind of flopped, but I've been attending. Let me put it that way. I'm not dropping out.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else?
AB3ZI, John in Pennsylvania.
Wow. Hi, John. I haven't heard from you in quite a while. Have you been on the call?
I have. No, I have not been getting on the call, nor have I kept up with the archives, but I wanted to see where the group stands at the moment. I'm active with my county amateur radio emergency service, so I'm tied into emergency communications people, MCOM. And, the YouTube ham resources are abundant, for one thing, so I wanted to mention that on the call. I've been looking into, for this year, I'd like to set up a packet radio BBS, and I think that would be an excellent contingency, for internet denial scenario, internet going down or being denied access. I think bulletin board systems really were an immediate precursor to the internet. There are a lot of precursors, but I think BBSs were an immediate precursor. And something else I've been looking into is ham approaches to wireless mesh networks.
Oh, what is it in the last part again?
Different approaches to wireless mesh networks, especially ones that are being worked on by hams, because there are some other groups, prepper community groups that are working on wireless mesh networks. But, of course, hams are their strength is in RF. So they've got a pretty good handle on quite a few factors involved with that particular endeavor.
Yes. What you find out is that hams there's so many aspects to the ham radio hobby that they go all over the place, and they're more technical than a lot of other people. And that sounds exactly what you are, John. I would like you to teach a short lesson, maybe 5-10 minutes sometime, if you would be amenable to that.
Sure, yeah, I'd be honored.
Well, keep it simple. Most of the people we have on this call are just getting started. They don't really have a handle on all of ham radio, but some of them have a lot more than you might think, like Jan and Wonder Ann and yourself and possibly some others. Sorry if I left anybody out. But I would very much like to understand what a mesh network is, because I don't know. So if you
would you like a brief description at this point?
Yeah, let's do a brief description, and then maybe you could teach us some other thing about what you're active in and kind of how it goes to kind of like prime somebody's primer, so that they kind of know that that's something that they might want or not want to do, so that they're not totally afraid of it, and then they're kind of hesitant to go figure out what it is. But go ahead. Yes, please tell us what a mesh network is.
Sure. So, as I understand the term mesh network, we're talking about an ad hoc network. So you've got a number of nodes, points in the network, and they can talk to each other. And with a wireless mesh network, the communication medium is going to be RF. It's going to be radio as opposed to a wired network. And it's like an island network, basically. So we could connect it to the internet, but we don't have to if we don't want to. And then the network can provide really any kind of services that we've come to expect from the internet ecosystem. So you can have a web server on the network, and you can have, with a BBS, which requires far less computational power, you can still have quite a few services like email, and chat and message boards and file transfers. And with a wireless approach, you really don't need an infrastructure. In fact, I just met with a group last week that I meet with monthly, routinely, and their approach was to have a solar panel powering each node. so they don't even need grid power for that. And then there's a set of batteries that are being powered by the solar panel, and then they've got some WISP routers, WISP, Whiskey, and they go Sierra Papa. So that's those are like routers akin to maybe the Linksys residential routers that a lot of us are familiar with, but they're designed for outdoor mounting. So then I have these devices outdoor that are communicating on Wi-Fi channels, you know, like 2.4 gigahertz or 5.8 gigahertz. And once again, they're solar powered, so it's complete. You don't need telephone lines, you don't need cable lines, you don't even need power lines for that type of network for a really catastrophic scenario.
And what kind of area do they cover?
Well, that I'm not sure of. I've seen some representations, some maps, but these WISP routers, and they're like commercial versions of the residential Linksys routers that a lot of us are familiar with. They still output less than a watt, so we're talking a few hundred milliwatts for the figures that I saw. I'm trying to recall some of the other specs that I had seen. The data throughput is pretty impressive. So they've got, I was looking at specs for one particular manufacturer, and they were using 40 megahertz wide channels. So, you know, in ham radio, to move bits around, to move data around, the wider the channel, you know, the spectral width, the more data we can move, basically. There's a direct correlation there. So with those higher frequencies, they could have wider channels as opposed to using the lower frequencies that'll give you greater range, but you've got far less bandwidth at your disposal for these channels. And that's another advantage of the BBS approach. Other callers may remember, you know, back in the 80s when BBSs were really at their prime, we had connection speeds of on the order of 300 baud or 1200 or 9600 baud. And that was sufficient for the kind of functionality that BBSs were providing. And some of those rates are what we find today with in the HF, you know, range, the lower frequencies, longer wavelengths that'll reach out hundreds of miles.
So you can really construct the nodes so that they pass on to the next node or multiple nodes on the net in such a way that they might be using something different and be able to pass it, maybe pass it slower for a longer distance. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's right, yeah. So to get back to your question about range, what this group that I met with recently discussed with the solar power nodes is setting up a few of them, a handful of them in a town here in Pennsylvania. So you have a lot of routing. You know, you're moving packets between these nodes, since each one of them doesn't have a whole lot of reach, maybe a few miles depending upon the terrain and other conditions. And with the solar powered unit, power consumption is a real concern. So one of the decisions that we need to make as a group is what kind of routing protocol we want to use. And that's going to determine how often these routers are talking to each other and transmitting RF, which is going to be the primary power draw on the batteries. So that's an interesting constraint that we're tackling there. I have not seen that particular constraint in the ham material that I've looked at, but I've only just begun my review of ham approaches to these mesh networks. And that the ham approaches are coming from the emergency communications community, you know, subset of the ham community. And they've got a couple of approaches that I'm aware of now, and they're really clever. And they're really solving a lot of problems that prepper type groups are trying to solve as well, you know, for similar scenarios. Even though, from what I've seen, I don't think that most of the emergency communication hams are really thinking about a total collapse. You know, they're focused on, you know, kind of localized disasters or regional disaster scenarios.
Well, that's a good thing to focus on is regional and local area. Because a net like that would be very valuable for a committee of safety to have so that they could pass text messages over it when maybe they couldn't reach a person. You build it like here we have mountains. And it would make sense to build nodes that would reach up into the canyons so that people up both canyons could receive communication even if everything was down. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's very prudent. And I just shared an article from, I'm not sure the website, it's an alternative media website that I do regard. I shared that on a couple of social media platforms a day or two ago. And it was a claim that there's evidence that the federal government had denied cellular communications out at the DAPL protest, and perhaps the Mellinger range there with the Bundys and the Hammonds. They've got that capability, and we can't rely on cell communications because we could be denied that as probably the internet kill switch, and so we need contingencies for communication.
Excuse me while I get up to my room. That's all really good. I appreciate that.
Did we lose you, Terry? Can anybody hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, Terry must be going upstairs then.
Yeah, I know a little bit about the mesh network, and I know a little bit about WISP. So I'd love for John to get in touch with me. I'm also in Pennsylvania. I'm in Pittsburgh. And I can give you my email address and phone number, John. There was a huge project started in 2009. This will be 8 years now. It was in the Scientific American magazine on electronics and robotics, 2009 article. I don't have the month, the date exact, but it was called The Omnipotence Machines. I can email it to you. I have it right in front of me.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
I'm in the library to get it. I don't have a website. But Hewlett-Packard and what's the other one? Intel. Intel's is the WISP, W-I-S-P. And Hewlett-Packard started Sense, which is C as in cat, E-N-S-E, Sense, which is the Central Nervous System for the Earth project. These two companies were doing a 10-year project. It's a 10-year effort, it says, to embed up to a trillion pushpin-sized sensors across the planet. It's a mesh network. Technologists say that the information gathered by this kind of ubiquitous sensing network affects our knowledge of the world as profoundly as the Internet has changed business. So they're 8 years into a 10-year project. If they're ahead of schedule, there is one of these pushpin head-size stackable sensors every 15 feet all over the world. Ultra-sensitive pushpin head-size stackable sensors that sense accelerometers, any type of sensors you can think, is so that they can tell chemicals, they can tell movement, they can tell pretty much everything. So the Intel product is WISP, the WISP. You can look up WISP in Wikipedia. The Sense I could not find in Wikipedia, but it's a network. It says right here, one of the Senses says that it's a long-range radio frequency ID chip readers. Smith says single reader plugged into a wall outlet can already power communicate with the network of the prototype, this WISP. But see, these little WISP and Sense mesh network devices do not need solar. They you don't need to change the batteries in them, in other words. I mean, this is a pretty knock-your-socks-off article. I'll send it to you, Jan, and maybe you can post it.
Okay.
And then, John, if you want to exchange information, I can send it to you, too.
Sure.
I'll send it to
Terry. I want a copy, too.
I'll get you a copy, too, Terry. My phone number, John, is 412-782-4441. That used to be a business phone number. That's why it sounds like it's a businessy phone number. So 412-782-4441. So it's a home phone number, so you can call after hours. And my email address is H for Helena, J for Joy, C as in cat, S as in Sam, 1234@hotmail.com.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Do we have any more check-ins? I'd like somebody to check in if you have a question or anything. Please go ahead. I kind of lost connection there for a minute. Thank you for filling in, Jan. This is KI0RE, Terry in Colorado. Anyone who hasn't checked in yet, please check in now.
Well, don't everybody speak at once, huh?
The silence was deafening.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Well, the I got the education tonight, courtesy of John. I have a lot to learn because I've fallen behind on a lot of this stuff. And, you know, if we had a mesh network that could extend out or across the country, I think that's probably what they're building towards. But if you had some links that were HF, the links would be, you know, on a frequency that's relatively quiet, and they would work as fast as they could. I imagine it would take some time for something to propagate from one side of the country to the other. And I don't think that the mesh network would work for voice communications. It would work more for a packet or textual type communications. Would that be correct, John?
Yeah, I'm looking into that. I'm just trying to get into packet radio, and I'm trying to get all the software and hardware components working on the same machine. I got a few machines at my disposal. One's a Windows 8 machine. I've got two Linux boxes. One of which I could reinstall Linux at will, but I'm having some difficulty with the software configuration. And what I'm trying to avoid is buying a $100 packet modem. And if I have to, I will. But there's software out there that'll make use of a sound card as a modem. Typical sound cards, you know, have plenty of horsepower, computational horsepower to function, you know, as for both modulation and demodulation and decoding and encoding of all this stuff. However, I've just been looking into some digital voice material over the last few days, and once again, the ham material online, on YouTube in particular, it's ubiquitous. There's plenty of material. And so there's one PhD who's been working on it. He's got an open source codec that digitizes voice, you know, and just it only handles speech, and his goal is to rival single sideband on the HF bands, and he's got the bit rates down to, I saw a video today, 450 bits per second, extraordinarily low. So that's all, that's where he is, I think, at the moment, at least from what I've seen. I saw some other material that indicated he was operating at 700 bits per second. So that's an extraordinarily low amount of information to move over an HF channel. And there are certain advantages to that, some disadvantages too versus analog. But that's some of the technology that's out there.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. So to explain, a codec it codes and decodes. And it sounds like what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, that he's able to take a normal voice for some period of time and condense it down to where it's only 450 bits, and that's getting small enough to where digital voice over a low bandwidth frequency is possible. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's correct. That's my understanding. In fact, with the 700 bits per second, he only needs a 1.25 kilohertz wide channel. And the samples are pretty impressive. They're intelligible. His aim is to get the bit rate down to the point where the speech is just barely intelligible. And, like I said, right now, analog is still superior on HF, you know, given all the propagation conditions. that he's working on. In fact, the project is Free DV, as in free digital voice. So it's all open source software, open source codecs. He's got some open source hardware as well that's out there. And of course, there are a number of competing commercial approaches to digital voice, but they typically operate on the UHF, VHF bands, and they're using wider channels, and they're moving a lot more higher bit rates. A few kilobits per second is at the range that they're at, from what I understand.
Well, between mesh networks and this codec that you're talking about. Now you've piqued my interest. I want to go find out something about that, so I'll be looking at that this week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, thank you very much for the enlightenment, John. And please come back and teach us something else about anything you choose regarding ham radio, emergency setups, emergency communications, just anything you want to teach. I would like to see it for 5-10 minutes, something like that. So please, prepare something. I would love it.
Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else want to check in? Okay. One of the things on ham radio is you're not supposed to talk in any special codes or you can speak in different languages, but you're not supposed to say Mary 1 2 3 10 27 Brown left side. You're not supposed to speak in codes, but you are allowed to use what's called a tactical. My tongue got tangled. A tactical call sign, and a tactical call sign is, instead of having to remember all these people that you might be coordinating, like KI0RE or AB3ZI or whatever your call sign is, John. I don't have it in front of me. I was driving. I didn't get a chance to write it down. Instead of having to remember all those call signs, you call them by their function. So you call one net control. You call another logistics. You call another one ambulance or med. You call them Med 1 or Med 2 or Logistics 1, Logistics 2, Logistics A, Logistics B, Rest Area 5, whatever you need to do. And it helps to plan all that out. So you do have the call signs. You can, if somebody fails to give their tactical call sign, you can look them up real quick and see, oh, that's Rest Area number 7. So you're allowed to do that. That's called tactical call signs. But you still have to adhere to, at the end of the conversation, every 10 minutes or at the end, you still have to give your call sign. Net control has to do that also. So you're not allowed to use a lot of tactical references beyond a reference to the person. So you can't talk in a coded message. We don't want to be saying, hey, number 27 is at grid location G7 tonight at 1430 UTC. Maybe that's okay if everybody understands what it is, but we want this to be clear so that everybody, anybody who wants to, can find out what they're talking about. It's okay to say, I'm going to go to tactical frequency number 7. Which means somebody's messing with us here on this frequency, and it's not really usable because the other person is either jamming or interfering with our communications. So we're going to go over to the agreed-upon tactical channel 7, which might mean I go to a different frequency or a different repeater. These things are there so that nobody can use it to plan against the United States or to do something clandestine on the ham radio. It's for amateurs who are supporting what's going on and what's necessary in their community. Does anybody have any questions? Silence is deafening once again. Okay, that's about all I got today. Unless somebody wants to ask a question or make a comment, go. Please call now. Okay, with that, we'll wrap it up. Everybody's welcome to give me a call at any time, and I will answer what I can. My number's up on the announcement of this meeting, or you can go to the flyer that Jan puts out, and it's up on the National Liberty Alliance website. Everybody's welcome to come to this meeting and participate, and I hope we can hear something from you next week, John. If there's no other comments or questions, I'll be closing the net momentarily. If you have anything else, call now. And I give those long pauses because on radio, you never know what the situation is. It may be somebody can't reach the transmit button. You want to give them plenty of time to realize that they can talk now, and they can reach over, grab their mic, push the transmit button, and begin to ask their question or give their part. It's okay to have dead air in ham radio. As a matter of fact, you like dead air before you start talking. Because when two people talk at the same time on the same repeater, you get all kinds of nonsense going on, and lots of times you hear neither one of them. So try and be courteous. Listen before you talk, and be ready. I want to encourage everybody to go out and do whatever they can. If you haven't finished the courses, the civics course, the Constitution course, finish them. If you don't know what a committee of safety is, please find out. If you wonder what you can do with communications on a committee of safety, let's talk about that. Learn it and tell me that that's what you want to hear. I will give you a synopsis of what I understand. Maybe John will too. Maybe Jan will too. This net is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. In this conference call, the conference call is up on nationallibertyalliance.org, Monday night call. It's the same call that's used for the Monday night call, the same conference call number, the same code. We meet, we talk about ham radio issues and anything related to committees of safety in support of those committees of safety. We encourage anybody to come in whenever they can or whenever they want to. And we just have a good time and try and enlighten each other like we did last night. Thank you, John. Without any further questions or comments, I'll go ahead and close the net. This is KI0RE, Terry, in Colorado, and the net is now closed. Thank you, Jan, and thank you, John, for your input, Helena and Beatrice. We appreciate it very much.